Thank you.
We'll be turning it back to our main hosts.
Thanks, Amber Ranson and Owen Thompson, for that wrap-up of what's going on in Toronto right now. Now we're going to move to something a little bit different. The Conservative Party's unwillingness to speak to media outlets has been making the news in this election. Journalists haven't been allowed to travel with Pierre Poilievre on his campaign travel bus or by plane, ending a tradition that has long been practiced through previous elections. I'm here with Mel Woods, who is a journalist and the senior editor, audience engagement, and author of the Rainbow Votes newsletter at Extra Magazine. They're here today to talk about this media dilemma, as well as to explore some issues facing the queer community in this election. Hi, Mel.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you here. I want to start just a little bit with Poilievre's media strategy. In the past, we've seen some occasional unfriendliness to the media. Pierre Poilievre has taken a very hard stance against the media. Can you tell me a little bit about his press strategy?
I mean, it is largely barring the gates to so-called mainstream press. Anybody kind of outside of this sort of alt-right influencer space, I would say, and you know, that's taken the form, like you mentioned before, of kind of limiting the traditional campaign brouhaha, which, for those who aren't aware, you know, traditionally in federal election campaigns, there's just like a busload or a plane load of journalists that travel with the major party leaders for all, you know, 5-6 weeks, however long it takes. And they stop in the various parts and they go to all the press conferences, and it's a whole thing, and media outlets kind of buy a ticket on that. You know, the Liberals did that this year. There's a group of journalists who travel with Mark Carney. Poilievre and the Conservatives just cut that off entirely in 2025. And so as a result, we've seen kind of weirdly limited coverage of the Conservatives because journalists haven't actually been able to ask questions or hold people to account. You know, at pressers where he does have it open to journalists, it's been limited to like 2 questions, 3 questions, and conservative staffers are often controlling who gets to ask those questions. And so you're seeing outlets like True North or like Rebel kind of getting to be able to come to the front of the line, and actual legitimate journalists being completely left out. And so it's an interesting strategy, whether it works or not, in terms of, I think that the general voter base has expressed some confusion or opaqueness that has come with the conservative policies and platforms because they just haven't been talking to media. You know, here at Extra, we reach out to various candidates, we reach out to various platforms based on LGBTQ2+ issues, and the conservatives just never answered any of our emails. And I think that's the case. We're kind of used to that. Progressive media outlets, further more issue-oriented progressive media outlets, are used to that. But I think the big difference in this election is you're seeing the mainstream outlets, the CBC, the Globe and Mail, Global News, CTV, also get that treatment from the conservatives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned it. It's been different in the past. What are some of the, I guess, consequences of that, of not being able to get that voice and to hear from those candidates?
Well, I mean, in like a like bare bones meat and potatoes journalism way, it's accountability. You know, you promise, you know, for example, Pierre Poilievre keeps on saying that he is going to end wokeism, and never gives opportunity for somebody to ask him what he means by that or what he is actually going to do to end wokeism. And then, you know, that's the role the journalists play in a campaign like this, is to be able to say these, look at these policy statements being put out by these federal leaders and say, okay, how are you going to do that? What does that actually mean? What does that actually look like? And challenge them on some of these issues. And so the conservatives have taken a strategy of kind of bubble wrapping themselves to being challenged on a lot of these issues. And again, we will see tonight how that works out for them, because it has been a really intentional strategy.
Mm-hmm. Mel, I want to talk a little bit about the Rainbow Votes newsletter. This was started in 2019, but you have since taken over for the 2025 federal election. Could you tell me about the newsletter? What's happening in it? Yeah. What have you been working on? Yeah.
Yeah, so here at Extra, for those who aren't familiar, we're an LGBTQ2+ focused publication based in Canada. And so back in 2019, our former politics editor, Erica Lenti, started up a pop-up newsletter tied to the federal campaign called Rainbow Votes. It came back in 2021, came back in 2020, tied to the U.S. election. And so when we were coming into this 2025 election, we decided to bring it back as a way of kind of bringing attention to the issues that matter to queer and trans voters across Canada throughout this campaign, highlighting some of the stories and things that really matter to our community and to our audience and to our readers. And so it's been every week. If you subscribe now at extramagazine.com, you'll get the very last edition this Thursday with the results of this election. And it's been diving into different stories every week based on, yeah, what queer and trans folks are talking about, looking at the polling numbers, looking at the kind of big social media moments, you know, when the various leaders went on Nardwar, very important, and that got a highlight in Rainbow Votes. So it's our way of being able to focus in on these issues and bring them to the forefront, even if the parties themselves are kind of barely scratching the surface of LGBTQ2+ issues.
Mm-hmm. And what have you seen each party talk about in relation to queer issues in this election? Where are the gays in the federal election party platform?
They are not there. and it's been really frustrating. It's been really frustrating. You know, I think that based on how prevalent queer and especially trans issues have been south of the border in the U.S., but also at the provincial level here in Canada, you know, these are talking points. These are things that are actual policies that are impacting actual people. And our federal leaders have been vastly silent on either side of this issue, on, you know, affirming their support for LGBTQ2S+ communities or introducing, you know, terrible policies. We've seen a tiny bits of it here and there. You know, it took until more than halfway through the campaign before Liberal leader Mark Carney affirmed that he said, you know, he stands with all Canadians. And he was basically talking about how he would not limit gender affirming health care functionally and or restrict charter rights for folks based on gender or sexuality. He didn't say it in those words because really vaguely talked about loving and supporting all people, which, you know, bare minimum, we'll take it. But that didn't come until like halfway through the campaign. The Conservatives on the other side have been, like I said, extolling this idea of eliminating wokeism. What does that mean? And I think are really trying to toe this line of not going too far down the Trump road, as we've seen south of the border, while still trying to kind of play to some of those kind of like heavily farther right populist socially conservative issues. And so we saw that in the actual Conservative Party of Canada platform. There was a line in there about, you know, banning trans women from women's prisons in Canada, as well as this kind of like vague throw to other protecting of women's spaces, air quotes, which is a big anti-trans dog whistle. It's suggesting this idea of things like bathroom bans or other really harmful anti-trans legislation. But, you know, from the Liberals and Conservatives, that's about it. That's about it that we've had in this election. And it's been really frustrating because, you know, I think my queer and trans community, we're scared right now because we're seeing what's happening in the States. We're seeing this like very intentional, regimented plot to restrict our rights. And we're seeing it happen at the provincial level. You know, in Alberta, my home province, there's, you know, sweeping anti-trans medical policies, there are sports bans, there's things like that happening in Canada right now. And I think the federal leaders have been kind of playing scared to really affirm their support or say anything too radical on the other side because of the climate in the States. And I think that we saw that happen in the States with the Trump campaign, kind of that really infamous Kamala's for they, them, Trump is for you ad that they really heavily pushed in the late days of the U.S. presidential campaign, kind of capitalizing on Kamala Harris's support for trans people and weaponizing it and turning it against her. So I think the Liberals in Canada see that and say, well, we don't want to get any Mark Carney is for they, them ads, so we're just not going to say anything affirmative or supportive of trans people. But then the trans people look at that and say, hello, excuse me, will you please stand up for our rights? So it's been a frustrating campaign in that way, because these issues are going to come up in governance. These issues are going to come up in actual policy, you know, however this election result falls. And it's disappointing that the leaders haven't been bringing them to the forefront in that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Previously, Polyev has like openly disagreed with the participation of trans women and women's sports teams, change rooms, bathrooms, all under the guise of sort of protecting women's safety. What could this mean for trans individuals if the Conservatives were to take a minority or majority government?
Well, the big question is federal jurisdiction with all of that, right? I think it was really easy a year ago for Poilievre to get those sound bites and to say those things at the time. It was, again, we were on the heels of Danielle Smith introducing this legislation in Alberta, Scott Moe in Saskatchewan, then Premier Blaine Higgs in New Brunswick. And so, he was kind of coming out in support of this seeming, however much you want to say, groundswell, I would argue with that, anti-trans movement in certain parts of Canadian conservatism. The difference with that is you get into an actual election campaign, and there's a good portion of the Canadian electorate who is not going to buy into that or vote for somebody who is espousing that. So he's quieted it down. Again, we've seen this kind of like vague anti-wokeism stuff. I bring all that up because the people who are calling for him to do these anti-trans policies aren't going away. So if he wins this election, if he becomes the prime minister, there is a certain very loud, very vocal section of his base who is going to be demanding policies around this. And we saw that at the Conservative National Convention with the types of policies introduced and passed at the party constitution level. And we're seeing that again in the provincial wings of the Conservative Party in places like Alberta. There is, again, not a high volume of people, but a very vocal minority of this movement that are calling for policies like this. And so I think that he's going to attempt to do some of that stuff at the federal level if he is elected. The difference, like I said, is jurisdiction. When it comes to things like healthcare, the federal government does not have a ton of control over healthcare. They can limit transfers to provinces that provide gender-affirming care, for example, if they want to go to that extreme. In the Conservative platform, we see that line about federal spaces for women's spaces. Could that be, like we've seen in the States, a like federal building bathroom ban? He can't actually like introduce that at the provincial level. He could hypothetically say, oh, if you want to come to Parliament, here's, single gendered bathrooms, et cetera, et cetera. Well, will he do that? It's going to be a big question. And it's a big question is like the color coming out of tonight, what the makeup of Parliament looks like, what the kind of vibe is, for lack of a better term. But there's still some stuff he can do. And he has also really made a point of saying that he will use the notwithstanding clause, in his terms, to go against mass murderers. But as soon as you start saying, I'm going to invoke the notwithstanding clause and start digging my fingers around in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, that opens the door to doing that for all sorts of people. So there's a lot of different ways it could go. But I think that the fact that that line is in the platform and the fact that he has said those things a year ago shows that there is some level of a, call it a mandate, if you will, for him to be pursuing this sort of policy. Again, whether there is actual widespread support for it is highly debatable. But the grassroots, the people, the loud people in the room within the Conservative Party of Canada, there are some of them who want to see this happen.
In a newsletter you put out recently, too, you specifically were talking about incarcerated trans women and sort of maybe some of the unique challenges they would face in specific to his rhetoric on like pledging to defend women's safety. Would you to talk about that a little bit?
And again, this line that's in that we're talking about within the Conservative Party of Canada platform, it's a one-off line where he's referring to the idea of quote unquote, and I put this in massive air quotes, biological males in women's spaces. And this is, again, a very dog whistle-y incorrect term that anti-trans movements use to refer to trans women to create this kind of specter of men invading women's spaces or a danger to women. And so many of these kind of ideas or these movements are based on lies, untruths. There's not this kind of high level of verifiable evidence that trans women in prison are any threat to cis women inmates either, just the same way as it is with bathrooms. There's this specter that the idea that trans people use bathrooms that align with their gender identity is going to like increase assaults of vulnerable cis women. And that's actually just untrue. There's just like not quantifiable evidence about that anywhere. The same as it is with sports. This is all a specter, and it's also a specter that is a moral panic that is based on these kind of societal fears that we have around women and children. And the way that these moral panics kind of grow within something like the Canadian Conservative movement is really digging at that and saying like, oh, well, we have to protect women. We have to keep women safe from these biological males. But trans women are disproportionately harmed by the prison system compared to cis women themselves. They are the ones who are actually victims here, for lack of a better word. comparatively. And so it's all, like I said, it's all based on like falsitudes here. It's a moral panic. It's not something that the average Canadian actually cares about. And that's why I come to so many of these kind of anti-trans policies. And I talked about it a lot when it was happening at the provincial level too, is that your Joe Blow, I'm out here in Vancouver, like an average voter, and even like talk about more conservative riding, Chilliwack, an average voter in Chilliwack doesn't actually deeply personally care about like the issue of like trans women in women's prisons. That's something they're kind of told that they need to care about. It's something that is constructed. And that's what we call a moral panic, is it's this kind of construction of an issue. And that's what trans issues at large have become for conservative politicians in the last decade or so, largely born out of movements in the UK and in the US, this stoking of these moral panics. And I think the Conservative Party of Canada is doing a lot of that right now. And that line is another example of it.
I want to just go back to press freedoms for a second here when we're talking about specifically through the lens of queer and trans issues. What have you been noticing specifically this election cycle when you're talking to candidates and trying to get in contact with them?
Yeah, I was gonna say it'd be great if I was talking to candidates. I think that we at Extra we reached out to the federal party leaders, and we reached out to the various parties as well to get comment to do some roundups. And we have a story on our site looking at the stances of the federal parties, written by Daniel Lorenko, that we sent out these kind of survey questions to each of the major federal parties. The Conservatives and the Bloc did not answer our email. The Liberals and the NDP kind of sent in bold statements, and it was only the Greens who actually answered any of the questions, question by question. And there's various degrees of that. I think people are very busy, obviously. There's, they're listening to the CBC. They think the CBC has way more readers than we do. That's fine. But at the same time, I think it's really important to still be talking about these issues. And if you are going to do the performative allyship and you're going to come and show up at a pride parade this summer or whatnot, you also need to answer our emails and actually be firm and say what you mean and what you believe in and what you stand for as a party, as a candidate, as an individual. And so it's disappointing, but I'm hopeful that in the coming, weeks and months, and we do have a good track record at Extra. Our political columnist, Dale Smith, is on Parliament Hill. He builds those relationships with the governing, MPs, as well as the opposition MPs and whatnot. And we get those kind of commentary after the fact. But I wish during the campaign itself that we were able to be kind of in the trenches in the same way that some of these other kind of media outlets are. But it's challenging. I mean, resources are also a big thing. It costs thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to get that seat on the Liberal plane. And the case, we don't have a lot of money. But it is what it is, right?
Yeah, Mel, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate hearing all your insights, and thank you for all the great work that you do at Extra Magazine.
Yes, and thanks so much for having me. And yeah, good luck with the rest of the stream tonight. I'll be tuning in and while watching with bated breath over at the I've got another screen over here with all the updates, and ooh, it's intense.
It's heating up. Things are happening. We're gonna go now. We have some results coming in, some ridings. We have 22 seats called for Liberals, 10 for Conservatives, and one for the Bloc. Kinza, our producer on the East Coast side, what is going on?
Yeah, thank you, Mia. Elections Canada is actually saying 21, 12, and 1. Currently, we have. Sorry, just getting my bearings here. One minute, Mia.
No worries. That was again Mel Woods, a journalist at Extra Magazine. They're the senior editor for audience engagement and the author of the Rainbow Votes newsletter. After we hear from ridings from Kinza, we're going to be hearing from two local ridings, one in Montreal, it's the Notre Dame de Grâce, and Corner Brook in Newfoundland.
Perfect. Yeah, we have some Liberal strongholds that have remained Liberal holds. We have Saint-Jean-Kennebec-Keeks in New Brunswick. We have Halifax in Nova Scotia, Cardigan in PEI, Dartmouth Coal in Nova Scotia, Beausejour in New Brunswick, Avalon in Newfoundland and Labrador. Labrador also remains. We have a Cape Spear and a Caddy Bathurst in New Brunswick, and Sackville, Bedford, Preston, all remaining Liberal strongholds. Before we continue, let's throw to a break.
Thanks, Kinza, for those updates. We now go to a local riding. That's Notre Dame de Grasse. That is Montreal. CHJO spoke with constituents last week. Liberal candidate Anna Ganey has canceled numerous public appearances. Voters are frustrated with this. They're frustrated with the MP's lack of public engagement. Adam Innes at CHJO has the story.
Thank you so much for joining You Multicultural. We're really happy to have you here with us. Can you please introduce yourself?
It's great to be here. This is a great opportunity. My name is Henrique Braga, and I'm a member of the Portuguese community here in Winnipeg. I'm involved in a variety of different centers and organizations, and also do the Portuguese media for the city of Winnipeg as well.
So, from election perspective and civic engagement, how proactive Portuguese community in Winnipeg and Manitoba?
The Portuguese have always been very interested in politics and making sure that their rights, especially since the majority of the immigrants here in Canada came at the time when Portugal was a dictatorship and never really having that opportunity to vote. So the voting and being representative has been an important part within the Portuguese community. So they do, many of them are active. I think one of the biggest issues that came across, of course, were language barriers. And for elderly or older, it's still a language barrier issue, in really understanding the, you know, what are the platforms of each party, and trying to understand what that platform is isn't an easy thing for them. In terms of the younger Portuguese, the apathy that exists within the Canadian society, they're part of that Canadian society. So there, we do see some of that as well.
Mm-hmm. So we had conversations with multiple ethnocultural communities here in Winnipeg, and some of them mentioned some barriers. So you mentioned that it could be language. The language may prevent them to understand the civic processes. So what else could be a barrier for the Portuguese community? Maybe some of them, like some people from the...
We now go to local riding in Montreal. CHJO spoke with constituents last week. Liberal candidate Anna Ganey has canceled numerous public appearances. Voters are frustrated with the MP's lack of public engagement. Adam Innes has the story.
I'm Adam Innes from CJLO 1690 AM in the NDG borough of Montreal. This is our PAC on incumbent MP Anna Ganey and controversy surrounding her few public appearances during this election. Booing and jeering at the Meet the Candidates event in NDG for the federal election, at the absence of sitting MP Anna Ganey.
This is not right.
The Meet the Candidates event is hosted by the NDG Community Council every Canadian federal election. It's a chance for community members to get to know the platforms of the candidates running in the riding for a seat in the House of Commons. Malcolm Lewis Richmond from the NDP, Marc Perez from the People's Party, Félix Antoine Borel from the Bloc Québécois, Arnold Downey from the Green Party, and independent Alex Trainman Montegno attended the event to answer community questions. Conservative candidate Neil Drapkin was absent, and most notably, sitting MP and Liberal candidate Anna Ganey was not in attendance. Ganey had sent two pre-recorded answers on housing and immigration to the event, which were played on a screen. Multiple members of the audience booed, walked out, and turned their backs.
$1 trillion in debt. No, but how does government create debt? Where are the houses going to come from?
Excuse me, we cannot have
it. Anna Ganey has canceled multiple public appearances in the riding, including her own campaign launch in March. The day after the NDG candidates' meeting, Ganey was scheduled to appear at a meet-and-greet in the Montreal West Library, but canceled the moment it was scheduled to start.
I am so sorry. I'm shocked as much as you are.
Here's the organizer of that event, librarian Deborah Marcoglese.
I really wanted to know a little bit about her, like, personally, so I had a bunch of silly questions to ask that I'm asking all the candidates. The second thing I was very interested in knowing is, what does she know about Montreal West? Like, what are the big issues that, like, federally are concerning Montreal West?
Ganey had walked into the library and turned around and walked right out before calling in to cancel. There was a group of community members from the riding representing the group Vote for Palestine there. They were hoping to talk to Ganey about their platform this election. One of their members, Samer Alkdor, says she believes Ganey left because she saw them and did not want to face the questions they had about Ganey's positions on Israel-Palestine.
We're here today to talk to her and just like any other citizen in this country. And I heard that she canceled because she doesn't feel safe. I don't know why. Just seeing the keffiyehs maybe is scary for her.
What were you hoping to ask her if she came in and sat down? What would you have said to Anna?
Like, at least to endorse the Palestine platform and to see her stand on Palestine, since she's running for the elections right now. So this is, like, a really important for issue, since I'm Palestinian. I have family in Gaza. So we need to know about the people that we're going to elect, if they're going to do anything in regards to Palestine.
NDG Westmount is projected to go Liberal and is considered a Liberal stronghold riding. Matthew Taylor is a doctoral candidate at the University of Montreal who studies party politics in Canada. He has a theory for why Ganey is not making many public appearances.
This is a riding that basically the Liberals need to be having a catastrophically bad election for them not to be winning. And for a candidate, that's going to create a lot of incentives to just not bother showing up in events. The worst you can do is actually hurt your campaign and yourself and your own standing by doing that, which, you know, I would say is a democratically problematic dynamic, but it is a dynamic nonetheless.
I'm standing out here in front of Anna Ganey's constituency office here in Westmount. Ganey has consistently denied an interview request with CJLO News for unspecified reasons. No one has spoken with me. I've knocked on the doors and I've been ignored by the people within the office. This is not for trying. We've attempted multiple times to phone Ganey's constituency office and her parliamentary office.
For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Okay, now we go to Bay FM, CKVB 100.1 FM in Corner Brook, Newfoundland.
100.1 Bay FM.
I'm Tanya Organ, local journalist at Bay FM, CKVB 100.1 FM, with a look at all five candidates running in the riding of Long Range Mountains. Recently, we featured a daily series on the Liberal, NDP, PC, PPC, and one independent. Before getting to know our candidates a little better, it's important to understand the riding which is being represented. Dean Clark has more in this report.
Long Range Mountains is exactly that. A series of mountains stretching along the west coast up to the northern tip of the island portion of Newfoundland and Labrador. Covering the entire west coast, it only came into effect in 2015. The two ridings of Humber-St. Barbe-Vert and Random-Buren-St. George's were combined. First elected in 2015, the riding has been a Liberal stronghold with Goody Hutchings as the Member of Parliament. This year's candidates are K. Carol Anstey of the Progressive Conservatives, Don Bradshaw for the Liberals. Robbie Coles is running as an independent, Pamela Geiger is with the People's Party of Canada, and Sarah Parsons is the new Democratic Party candidate. Long Range Mountains covers an area from Channel, Portabasque, and Burgio in the south to St. Anthony and Lonsdale Meadows in the north. The city of Corner Brook is the largest community, and the riding also includes picturesque